This week on What's Up with Karen, we've got another one-on-one interview for you. Today's episode is a conversation with a woman who I met through her volunteer work with a nonprofit organization. But when she's not out saving the floundering volunteer boards of the world, Trish can be found at her day job as an entrepreneur and a strategist for Team. Oh, did I mention she's also the CEO of Team? Since I tend to ramble in these conversations, I've tried to cut out most of that so you can enjoy some key tidbits and sage wisdom from Trish. And I've also pulled out some choice pieces from Trish to share in other episodes. So if her voice sounds familiar, or if you start experiencing deja vu before your third glass of wine while listening to next week's episode, that's why. Probably. That or you've gotten into the tequila a little too early in the afternoon. Again. Anyhow, here's Trish. Early in our conversation, I asked Trish to weigh in on the question of whether the dichotomy of things and people being either fundamentally racist or anti-racist felt accurate to her.
That's interesting. I kind of see both sides of the coin, which is sort of typical with me. But I do think that you either fundamentally believe in a racist philosophy or you don't. I don't think, though, that the actual manifestation of that foundational belief always exhibits itself cleanly, though. I mean, while your heart space may live in, I'm completely anti-racist. I totally believe in equality. I never want to see anybody discriminated against. The reality is that subconscious bias, cultural mores we've grown up with, the environment that we're with, you know, in every day, the people we're around every day, they influence all of us. And it's not that cut and dry. I mean, academic studies have even proven that most people of color have bias against people of color. There's some things that are baked into the fabric of our society that I think we're trying to root out together right now and shift those dynamics that underpin a lot of the ugly stuff on the surface. So while I do think, yeah, fundamentally, you either believe that certain groups of people are better than others or you don't, I think the day-to-day reality of walking the walk there's gray in there. I hate to say that, but I truly believe that living our principles is not a perfect science, you know?
Because she often coaches people who are new in their leadership positions, I asked Trish to give folks some advice, particularly if they're newer to managing or supervising other people, as to what to do when someone just said something that you think might be kind of racist in a meeting or a conversation.
To make sure that you understand what the intent was behind the statement. I think a lot of us, and I grew up in the South, if you hear the twang, so I know how it is to have catchphrases, sayings, just language that you inherited growing up that's not necessarily appropriate or necessarily what you mean to say, but it's things that they're in your head. I think we've all gotten to a point, I hope, if you're trying to be a conscious person, where you're paying very close attention to your words now, and you're trying your best to use language that's clear, that's inoffensive, that's accessible to everybody, and that expresses your true meaning. So what I usually do in those situations is first verify, was blah, blah, blah what you intended to say? And if so, then you can address it. But sometimes people would say, oh, that's not what I meant at all. And then you can talk more surface about language. If someone's intent really was to say what came out of their mouth, then you have a different issue that you might have to address as a manager, as a friend, as a colleague, to say, get to the underlying belief. You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, our beliefs drive our behaviors. And so I think it's important when a behavior's exhibiting itself that's negative, that you look at what is the underlying belief below that? Is there one? If so, what can I do to change it? I would encourage people to begin by clarifying the intent of the situation before you attack, because it's easy to pounce when somebody said one word that was wrong. And sometimes the core intent or the underlying belief is not there. That's the thing you're really going after.
Then we turn the tables around. What if you just got feedback from another person that you said something that came across as racist, whether or not that was your original intention? And what can you do with or learn from the feeling of shame?
Do you have any suggestions for someone who maybe has just gotten some feedback that is really hard for them to hear? Like, is there value in feeling shame sometimes?
I actually don't think there's a great deal of value in shame. I think that it's an emotion that washes over us naturally when we've done something inappropriate or wrong. And that's not a bad thing. But I think we need to super quickly transition from feeling shame to how do I modify my behavior? How do I address a similar situation differently in the future so that this dreadful feeling and the effect that my actions have had on somebody else that's driving it, which is really the core issue, doesn't repeat. I mean, let's just not rinse and repeat over and over again. So, you know, I think where shame has value, you know, a bit like failure does in other parts of life is what can I learn from this? How do I grow and move forward? How do I avoid repeating the same issue? And if people can channel their shame in that direction, I think that helps. And anytime that you do feel like you need to bring up to someone that their behavior might in fact be shameful, I think how you do that is very important as well, that you remember that there's a human underneath and there might be a myriad of factors that are driving the way they're behaving in that moment. And that while it's right for you to call it out, that there's a kind and supportive and ultimately positive way to do that. And then there's you just making a negative situation worse.
It feels to me like it's much more tempting to want to call someone out than and to like to humiliate them or to correct their language or whatever, than it is to try and find that supportive way that really recognizes their humanity. Why is it so much more fun to call people out? Why do we love to post Karen videos?
It makes us feel good. It's ego. I mean, you know, it's part of the way we rise and how we feel personally about ourselves, unfortunately, is pushing other people down. You know, it's not necessarily that we're on a meteoric trajectory to the heavens. It's usually that, you know, we're walking over other people to some extent, right? So I think it's a bit of it's just organic herd behavior, which I don't know that we like to think of ourselves that way, but, you know. It's true.
We're all animals.
We are. And we're herd animals at that. So, and I think sometimes it's easiest. I don't know. I'll use a story that happened with my husband, he's Polynesian and his skin's very dark. And so he deals with quite a few, person of color issues just in his day-to-day life. So this was years and years ago. We were in Colorado and he owned a landscaping and lawn maintenance company. And he was actually at one of our clients' houses working in her yard that day because he did, you know, some of the work out with the crews. And she got angry about something and she was definitely treating him, you know, like he was sort of the hired help, the village idiot. And she's like, I'm going to call the office. So she called and of course got me. I said, well, you know, let me put you through to his cell phone. And of course he's standing there right in front of her and she's angry and she thinks she's talking to, you know, this random guy and his phone rings and he picks it up and they're standing there looking at each other. And she was like, oh, you're the owner of the company. And he was like, yeah, I am. So the buck stops here. Do you want to have a sane conversation now about, you know, what's wrong? But I never brought it up. We just simply let the circle of communication take its course. And for her to have that moment of realization that I should have never assumed that someone with this color skin who's actually out here doing work in my yard has no authority, doesn't own the company, is a nobody. It was that subconscious bias, you know, glaring in your face. And so hopefully that was a moment where she felt just like we were just talking about, that very natural, very well-earned little bit of shame that might help her modify her behavior next time when she's dealing with somebody who's doing some work around her house. We'll see.
Trish had a great point on the cumulative impact of so-called microaggressions and how someone like me asking just to speak to the manager might not feel like a big deal to me, the white person, in that interaction in that moment. but how it could have much greater repercussions for the person of color on the receiving end and the scars those kinds of experiences can leave behind.
It might seem like there was just this little piece of damage when I made a comment or when I acted in when I asked to speak to someone's manager, but realizing like, oh, actually, I probably am not seeing all of the layers of damage that I might have caused in that moment.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm talking about with the micro cuts and the scarring, that, you know, sometimes we have to see the huge egregious wound, but we shouldn't minimize the long-term negative impact of just a slow, steady erosion of somebody's sense of self, somebody's sense of safety, somebody's sense of support in the society in which they live, and that has extreme long-term negative impact on who they are as a person, how they, you know, their success in the world, their relationships, all those things. So that to me is really the most sad part of Karen behavior that we see, is that it's not egregious enough to warrant throwing them in prison, but those, the micro cuts, the scarring that they leave across their interactions with probably a myriad of people in a lot of cases, it's really bad. It's a really something to be dealt with. So I'm really happy that you're having this conversation and pulling it front and center.
Thank you.
Trish and I talked about the dangers of getting caught up in conversations about being politically correct rather than addressing actual issues of underlying racism and systemic bias.
We need to address people that actually have an underlying systemic bias, or they've intended to say something harmful. Our goal shouldn't really be to just shine up the surface, you know. Our goal should be to understand where there's actually something sick underneath that needs to be dealt with. And just harping on people about politically correct language, and we're seeing shifts in some of those things right now. You know, is it people of color? Is it African American? That's kind of out. Now it's Black with a capital B. That's not really solving anything, how we label something. What solves things is getting to the underlying beliefs in people's hearts that are behind the words. And the words can definitely be an indicator, but we don't need to confuse, you know, the symptom with the disease, I guess.
I really like, especially that analogy of shining things up, of just like, let's make this look pretty instead of, whoa, is there something underneath there that we really need to stop and
right.
Let's pull that radish root out.
Your concern, I mean, unless it's totally a racial slur, shouldn't be how somebody refers to you. It should be how they actually treat you. I mean, what your actual human dynamic is with them and what's in their heart. So, yeah.
I really appreciated this advice from Trish for people who want to get involved in figuring out how to end segregation, fight oppression, and be warriors for social justice. Basically, you gotta learn how to crawl before you can effectively march for social justice.
I mean, my bottom line is I would say get to know some people of color. If you have no friends, no coworkers, no family members who are different from you, then that is the place to start. Because all the things that are manifested and that are hoped for through social action, you know, political action, they're really grounded in this segregation that's existed in our society for so long. If you don't have a single Black friend, before you go to a Black Lives Matter rally, I would say try to meet somebody in your own neighborhood or school or workplace and build a personal bond with someone. That is far more important and far more impactful in terms of actually knitting the fabric of our society together in a healthier way that's going to be beneficial in a myriad of methods long term than you writing your thoughts on a piece of cardboard, stapling it to a stick, and walking down the street for an hour. I mean, if you really want to change things, do the work. And the work isn't, and I'm not saying that peaceful protest doesn't have a place. It absolutely does. But I think to your point, it's often the easiest and the most visible ego boosting way to pretend you've done something to actually change society.
And one final piece of wisdom from Trish, for companies that are either wanting to take a stand on social justice issues or just feeling pressured to.
I mean, one thing that's come up front and center really in the last year, especially with the Black Lives Matter protest, is I've had a lot of clients who have wanted to weigh in with a public statement or who have wanted to talk about diversity and inclusion and things like that on their company blogs or in executive initiatives or email communications. We've had to have some hard conversations around the fact that maybe a consulting company that's all dozens of 50 plus white men shouldn't make a statement on the value of diversity and inclusion, that maybe you should hire a couple of diverse people. You know, let's get a few women in the mix. Let's get a few people of color in the mix. And then maybe you have a little bit of moral high ground to make a statement. So gently trying to let people know that, you know, you kind of need a platform from which to speak rather than just shouting into the ether. And I appreciate people wanting to contribute to the conversation, but I do think that actions speak louder than words. And that's where a lot of our coaching around companies' brand equity and their visibility and their positions on some of these public issues right now has kind of landed. Do you have high ground? If not, maybe you should work on that before you speak.
Thanks again to Trish from Team, T-E-E-M, for a lovely conversation, some sage wisdom, and the appropriate dash of Southern comfort all mixed together in one neat little episode package. Next week on What's Up with Karen? Again, it's a bit of a mystery. I've started working on an episode about segregation and how it manifests in our U.S. present society that might be done, or you might get a chance to meet the many people who have participated in the What's Up with Karen project so far and to hear some of the questions that they asked me to answer at the end of our conversations. Or it might just be the sound of not at all sexy, heavy breathing as I dig my way out of the latest snowstorm and try not to lose a chihuahua in the process. Anyhow, talk to you soon.